From the 91.5 KRCC Newsroom, I'm Andrea Chalfin. Where the Water Goes, Life and Death Along the Colorado River is a new book from David Owen, a staff writer with the New Yorker magazine and author of more than a dozen books. His latest takes him on a journey across the West following the Colorado River, the dams, reservoirs, and pipelines that help quench the thirst of seven states and parts of Mexico. David Owen joins me for a conversation about his book. Welcome, David.
Hi.
You live in Connecticut, but you write in your book you grew up in Kansas City and spent a fair amount of time in Colorado. So you have a personal connection, but why this book and why right now?
I've written about a number of environmental issues, and I was, I think, like everyone, interested in water and worried about water. And the Colorado is a very convenient source of water issues because it's long, but it's not very long. It's 1,400 miles, roughly. It crosses through a lot of the United States, but it's accessible, and we use it all up, I think, is the most interesting thing about it.
You know, one of the main things we often hear in Colorado is that the river is overappropriated, you know, too many straws poking in, and that the reason is largely due to flow measurements taken during wetter years. But that was in the 20s, and we've since come to understand that flaw. But has anything changed since then?
The agreement that the states made in the 1920s still exists, but it's been added on to in lots of ways. And in some ways, if you're starting now, nobody would do it the way they did it then. But I think one thing that a number of Western water experts told me is that the agreements, the compact, and the law of the river, which is sort of the larger body of thinking about where that water goes, they've evolved over the decades. One reason the states have adapted their thinking is that they're always afraid that the federal government is going to step in. And so they've accommodated to some extent anyway, competing needs. They included Mexico in their idea of who deserved to get water from the river, which was not necessarily the case in the beginning. So it's in some ways, the agreements that the states made about what to do with that water seems just like just a crazy anachronism. In another way, it seems like almost a kind of model for how to think about environmental issues of all kinds, because they've kept sort of hammering away at it. And it's proved to be more durable than I think probably you would guess if you didn't know the history of it.
Throughout the book, an idea keeps cropping up about this paradox of conservation. And you talk about it in the Grand Valley here in Colorado, for instance. What is this paradox of conservation?
It's sort of the paradox of efficiency. It applies to energy efficiency, too. And I think the simplest way to say it is that the real impact of improvements in efficiency depends on what we do with what we save. There are places where clearly irrigators waste water. You see water running off. You see it pooling by the side of flood-irrigated fields. And yet if you make that irrigation system more efficient so that there's less waste, you have impacts that you don't necessarily anticipate, one of which is that there's less water soaking into the ground, which means there's less support for local aquifers, which support not only the wells that people drill into them, but also surface streams very often. So I think it's always with conservation, with efficiency. It's never as simple as it seems.
And you were talking about the flood irrigation as well, which is, you know, some people might say, well, why don't they just have more efficient means of irrigating? But that's where the law of prior appropriation comes in, right? Where that if you don't use the water that you quote-unquote own, then you could potentially lose it.
Well, it's... Prior appropriation is so complicated that it's really interesting. And I guess I should to backtrack a little bit and just say that water in the West legally is handled in a way that's completely different from the way it is in the East. And the reason is that there's relatively little water in the West. And what was discovered during various gold rushes in the 1800s was that you can't share water in that region, because if you divide it up – you may reduce the stream to a size where it isn't of any use to any of the people who are dividing it up. And so the West evolved a different way of thinking about water rights, which was that the first in time, first in right, the first person who puts water to a beneficial use gains the right in perpetuity to use that amount for that purpose. So it's different, and it's complicated. And yes, you have to, there's a use it or lose it element to prior appropriation. In fact, that was the whole evolution of the Colorado River Compact was concern in places like Colorado that California was going to develop so fast that Californians would develop prior appropriation claims to essentially all the water in the river before people in Colorado were in a position to use more than a trivial amount of it.
In your book, you talk about how in-channel diversions or perhaps the idea that the river has rights to keep the water. How much does that play into the overappropriation of the Colorado River?
Well, I think it's, you know, everything is an element. When the river was divided up in the 1920s, nobody thought about environmental issues the way people do today. Conservation in those days meant extracting every dollar you possibly can from a river before it wastefully flows into the sea. And we have a more complicated idea about the value of water today. And the state of Colorado has been a leader in sort of kind of grafting that onto the prior appropriation idea, where you begin to think about things like the needs of fish and animals that drink at streams. You think about that as being potentially having the same kind of value that people used to think about for just mining and agriculture, and you give that a place in the priority system too, and recreation as well. So there have been ongoing legal attempts to kind of incorporate modern thinking into this now almost a century-old legal framework that didn't anticipate them at all when people drew it up originally.
What are the lessons here in the Colorado River?
One of the reasons to be optimistic about water is that we need water right now. You know, you don't live another day if you don't have water. And so people with water problems solve them one way or another. They address them. The difficulty is making it all fit into the whole picture and making the water piece fit with everything else and not allowing, you know, improvements in the way we – reductions in our water use allow – not letting that simply allow us to fuel sprawl or to create other environmental problems just because we figured out how to be better at using this one resource. Everything all fits together. But it's hard to keep all those pieces moving at the same time and then to make them come together into something that's really sensible and that makes sense for the future.
That was David Owen, staff writer at the New Yorker magazine and author of the new book, Where the Water Goes, Life and Death Along the Colorado River. For 91.5 KRCC News, I'm Andrea Chalfin.